Yes, Madam Chair. I have had a chance to review the minutes, and I move the minutes.
All right. Representative Berg moves to approve the minutes from Wednesday, January 18th. Any discussions of the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Thank you. The minutes of January 18th are approved. Before we get to our first bill of the day, I want to highlight something that will be happening tomorrow. The original tent for House File 345 had been to hear it and then move it to Education Finance. But as we discussed with the author of the bill and as we reviewed the amendment that came in, the author's amendment that came in, the intent now is not to move it out of the committee, but to hear it and lay it over for future consideration. So that preview of tomorrow and the intent of what we'll be doing tomorrow. So thank you, members, for allowing for this adjustment. All right, and now, next up, we'll be returning to a bill that we heard a presentation on last Wednesday, which is House File 320, Representative Hassan as our chief author, the Teachers of Color Act. And thank you for returning to our committee today to bring forward this major bill before our House Education Policy Committee. I will move that House File 320 be before the committee again. And I believe that there is a author's amendment for the bill. And when we are, when we're up and running, I will have our author reintroduce herself for the committee. And at that point, I will may be able to address the amendment that is before us, which is the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Sorry, I ran here, so I'm a little out of breath.
I know, Representative. We are not in the state office building.
Hoden Hassan, presenting Teachers of Color bill, and it was my understanding that we were going to move this bill, but
we are okay. we're moving the bill, but and so it's before our committee again. The intent is today that we will vote on advancing this bill to Education Finance at the end of our discussion.
All right. Okay. All right. Are we discussing the
right? And it's the A2 amendment, which I would. I will move that the A2 amendment be before us. And Representative Hassan, if you will speak to the A2 amendment.
So the A2 amendment is just adding, it's inserting funding for PELSP. We added the last Wednesday, I addressed the one thing that's different from this bill from last versions of this bill was the reporting that we're doing, the hiring and firing of teachers of color, indigenous teachers. And PELSP said that they have to hire someone for that. And it's $60,000 for 2024 and $60,000 for 2025, if I'm not mistaken. I'm looking at, so it's $120,000 for PELSP to hire a part-time individual to do this work, and that's what this amendment is.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hassan. Any questions or discussion of the A2 amendment? Thank you, committee. Then we will take a vote on the A2 amendment. All in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you, members. The A2 amendment is adopted. All right. So, great. Now we have before us our bill as amended today. We'll complete. We have still public testimony to offer on the bill, and then we'll have member discussion. So there is also, I want to note that we do have a House Research The summary is in our packets, which, if you have not had time to review it, is complete and will answer probably many questions that you might have. All right. So, Representative Hassan, if you don't have any other comments at this point in time, we'll turn to our public testimony on the bill.
I think that I have said all that I need to say on last Wednesday, but I would love to move to public testimony, and then I'm ready for member questions.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. All right. So we have a number of testifiers that have signed up, and if you will be coming up to our table. The first up, I have Megan. I'm sorry, Megan. Arolia. And some of this is some issues that I have where actually my lips are not as flexible as they usually are. They're a bit swollen right now. But please identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You are not the first. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Megan Adiola. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the legislative coordinator with the Minnesota Department of Education. We're just here to provide some brief comments on a number of policy sections in Representative Hassan's bill that align with policy language that the governor and the department have carried in the past, and you should be seeing in our bill this year as well. Setting a state goal for increasing the percentage of teachers of color in American Indian teachers and ensuring students have access to teachers who reflect their diversity is a common sense goal that we should adopt. We know that all students do better when they have access to diverse teachers. Many of the proposals provide supports, expectations, goals, and aspirations around creating a more inclusive and affirming teaching and learning environment. Modifications to statutes for the world's best workforce, evaluation and development, and achievement and integration programs recognize the commitment to a more culturally responsive and inclusive environment. This provides students with support systems that will benefit them and our students and all of our adults as well. This legislature made a serious commitment to a more diverse and representative teaching force two sessions ago with its funding priorities around teacher diversity. We should be doing the same in policy as well. As more and more teachers report feeling vulnerable or afraid to teach a well-rounded and accurate account of their subject area for fear of disciplinary actions, we really appreciate Representative Hassan adopting language that the governor's carried for a number of years, which would provide statutory protections to teachers providing instructions on federally protected classes of people. Finally, we are also happy to see two of our proposals that have been part of the governor's bill make its way into this package as well around American Indian education. There is a prohibition on depicting American Indians as mascots without an exemption from the tribal nations, and a provision affirming the right of American Indian students to wear tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. Both of these policy changes would make important and far past due changes to affirming our American Indian students, families, and tribal nations. Again, thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to provide some support for this important bill.
Thank you. Next up, we have Katia Zepeda, who I believe, yes, is in person. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Katia Cepeda, and I represent I serve as the Legislative and Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Latino Affairs. As our councils have done every year since 2017, we are here to share a united message from the three state ethnic councils and the Indian Affairs Council in strong support of the Increased Teachers of Color Act, House File 320, as our top joint priority in education. As state agencies, our important charge is to advise and inform state lawmakers about our constituent communities and their needs. As you heard from the youth who testified last week, they are yearning for teachers, for more teachers who they can relate to racially, ethnically, and culturally. However, this gap between the increasing diversity of students in schools and the lack of diversity of teachers widens each year. Addressing the severe shortage is key to narrowing our state's persistent opportunity and achievement gaps, which disproportionately impact our constituent communities. Over the course of the pandemic, our families have expressed that the policy language included in this bill would have mitigated a number of the communication issues and lack of support they experienced during shifts to and from distance learning. It's important that this bill would require districts to have plans to ensure that curriculum is rigorous, accurate, anti-racist, and culturally sustaining, and that learning and work environments validate, embrace, affirm, and integrate the cultural and community strengths for all students, family, and employees. These strengthened plans will be critical in addressing the wide-ranging impact that COVID-19 has inflicted on student learning. Students' mental health has been suffering these past 3 years, even more than before due to the pandemic and current events. More than ever, it's important for students to have teachers who understand racial and generational trauma and who can provide the support they need to deal with their mental health and be successful in school. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I have Andrew Morris.
That's me.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Andrew Morris, and I serve as the Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Research has clearly demonstrated that all students benefit from having diverse teachers. Yet, the same research is also clear that for students of color, having teachers who reflect their diverse backgrounds also narrows achievement gaps. We must be responsive to the needs of these students and take this opportunity to change the trajectory of their academic success and their future. Additionally, many schools across our state continue to struggle with persistent workforce shortages. This bill will not only address the shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers, but also contribute to addressing the overall teacher shortage in our schools. Our councils and communities have called for equity in all aspects of society. If we are to expect different results as a state in our efforts to narrow achievement gaps, we must do things differently and address opportunity gaps. In this regard, House File 320 represents significant positive change that will make a difference in the lives and learning of our students. We appreciate the leadership demonstrated by Chair Pryor in prioritizing this hearing, and to Representative Hassan for serving as lead author. Members of the committee, we thank you for your leadership and commitment to doing what is right for all students in Minnesota. We strongly recommend that you support all provisions in the 2023 Increased Teachers of Color Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have from Pelsby, Elena Bailey and Michelle Vaught. Thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Dr. Elena Bailey. I am the interim executive director for Pelsby. For the past several years, the board has voted unanimously to support the Increased Teachers of Color Act, and I'm just here to highlight a few of the provisions that the board is particularly excited about. The first is around setting state goals and reporting. So across our state, parents and families and students have been advocating for increased teacher diversity, and those programs are funded across our different agencies of Office of Higher Education, the Department of Education, and Pelsby. We believe that the provisions in this bill would help solidify that work with greater collaboration, and through our coordination would strengthen our impact of having a measurable growth in the teachers of color we have in the state. The second item we'd like to highlight is around teacher licensure exams. So we currently know that about a third of our teachers who hold a Tier 2 license have completed teacher preparation and just can't pass those exams to get their full professional license. And a third of those individuals are teachers of color. We know in Minnesota that teacher candidates have to demonstrate the capacity for success and effectiveness before they're recommended for licensure. So Pelsby does not see these exams as a necessary requirement and fully supports their removal, which is a provision in this bill. The third item we'd like to highlight is the changes to the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators for Color Bill. This was the subject of a 2021 OLA audit, and the provisions in this bill actually respond to that. The OLA recommended changes to the legislative language that would clarify the administration of that grant. I'll add that having spent time personally visiting each of those grantee institutions and seeing the work that they're doing, which is incredible to support teacher candidates of color, the increased funding included in this, I can say wholeheartedly, will do a great deal to increase that impact across the state. The final thing we'd like to highlight are the changes in language to the teacher mentorship grant. We are hearing anecdotally from districts across the state that great work is already being done through affinity groups and teacher mentorship programs. And so the clarification of language in this bill would help to further increase that impact. So in closing, we just want to say that the board fully supports the provisions in HF 320 and that we would encourage the committee to vote in support as well.
Right. For the testifier, do you have a question, Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Bailey. First, I want to emphasize that I think that this is an important bill. I'm not sure I agree with some of the provisions, but it's an important bill, an important subject. I was once the chief author of a bill like this in a previous rendition. But my question, Ms. Bailey, in eliminating the skills tests in reading, writing, and math for Tier 4, do we not need these tests? I mean, should we eliminate them if they're not needed for all categories?
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's a great question. Pelsby, the board is actually advocating the removal of these exams for all individuals who complete teacher preparation in Minnesota. Because of time, I didn't say it earlier, but research has shown no correlation between these exams and preparedness or effectiveness. Because we know that our teacher preparation programs are rigorous and that they have to demonstrate that and other means, we do recommend their removal.
Representative Burley?
Oh, okay, I guess that answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other question for Dr. Bailey? All right, thank you, members. Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Next testifier I have on my list is Scott Heland. Thank you for joining us, and please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Scott Heland. I'm here representing Literacy Action Network, the professional organization for the adult education in the state of Minnesota. Not only is House File 320 good for K-12, but also for adult learners as well in the state of Minnesota. Over 81% of adult ed learners identify as students of color, and the teaching profession does not mirror this currently. Our staff is enriched with multicultural and multilingual staff who can provide a unique comfort zone for our international adult learners. When this is a factor, we see the added value. As an example, in our office for adult education at Harmony, where I spend my days, I've seen the benefits of having employees who speak Hmong and are Hmong. The students respond differently and with greater confidence as they enter our education and schooling at Harmony. They ask questions in both their native language and English that they might never come to discuss without that comfort level. Our Turkish American teacher has students relate to her in a different way than other English teachers, while the teacher originally from Turkey connects with students of all nationalities. We also have a native French speaker from France who also speaks Chinese and often brings students who share the French language from countries in Africa to a place of comfort and understanding. I might add that the underrepresented teaching segment for adult learners are teachers from the deaf and hard of hearing community as well. And that has been something that we're working in adult education to try to make sure that we have that population represented as well. Literacy Action Network supports HF 320 and the increased efforts to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indians in the workforce. The methods outlined in this bill, House File 320, necessary to bring the percentage of teachers to a level more representative of the student representation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And our final public testifier is Paul Spies. Thank you for joining us. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, members, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Spies. I am the legislative action team lead for the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. But first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Hassan for leading this bill so well this year, as well as the last couple of years. Chair Breyer for giving us a hearing. Representative Erdahl for being the very first, as he noted, chief author of the Increased Teacher of Color Act in 2017. And Representative Keeler for being lead author of the higher ed bill, Representative Frazier, Representative Joaquin for all your leadership on this issue over the past few years, as well as the Posse Caucus and the State Indian Affairs Council and Ethnic Councils that you heard from today. The coalition started in 2015, in December of 2015, because we realized there was a great need to address the systemic barriers that school districts and higher ed institutions were facing in trying to diversify the workforce, which at that time was 3.8% BIPOC in the state. Our students of color population was about 30%. It's increased about 1% each year since then, and we're now at 37% BIPOC students, but we're only around 6% BIPOC teachers in the state. So we're very happy that this bill is moving forward. We appreciate your support. If you care about closing opportunity and achievement gaps, this bill is an important component of that answer to what we can do differently in the state that we haven't done before to close these opportunity and achievement gaps. As Sarah Lancaster, Minnesota Teacher of the Year, said last week to this committee, if we had a teaching force that reflected our student population in the state, we would have 20,000 more BIPOC teachers than we do currently. 20,000 more than we do currently. We're in a deep, deep hole. We need these policies to have a strong return on the investments that we hope will be made and increased in with the surplus money in the budget. And I thank you for your attention and support.
Thank you for your testimony. And at this point, we've heard from all of we've heard the testimony on the bill. We've heard from our public testifiers. We open now to member discussion before we vote on the bill. And Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Hassan, Representative Hassan, for this bill. I do have a concern about one of the provisions where we're removing the teaching licensure exams. I've been a teacher for almost 20 years, and in my classroom, I've never appreciated standardized tests. I find that many of my students can show mastery of skills in different ways. And so I appreciate the sentiment that this is doing, and also as a teacher who had to take the test multiple times because I don't test well, I understand exactly the purpose of this. My question is, what are some of the other job or career paths that have decided to remove licensure exams?
Representative Holden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Mueller, for the question. We do have, you know, experts in the room. I'm not an expert on this, but I think if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Bailey earlier testified and said that because of the teacher preparation and how rigorous that is, these tests are not needed. I also am not a great test taker, and I think those, you know, standardized tests do not test it doesn't test intelligence. It doesn't test, you know, how well people understand subject. It's who can, you know, master how to take tests. But I will ask Dr. Bailey or someone else, or maybe Paul Species can answer that question. I don't know if there are other areas that do not need this testing. Dr. Bailey?
Dr. Bailey, you will join us again. And re-identify yourself, if you would.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Dr. Bailey, again, the Interim Executive Director of Pelsby. I can come up with one great example, which would be people like myself and Dr. Spees over here. Education is a bit different because things tend to be performance-based, so to be clear, we're not against assessment, but the idea of performance-based assessment is different than standardized exams. And we're really looking at what the research is showing in terms of effectiveness and correlation. So for myself, to get my PhD, become a professor, there was no exam that I take for that, right? But I did have to do performance-based assessments to show and demonstrate my capacity. And that, for us, to clarify, is built into teacher preparation. As the body, the agency that is given the authority by you to regulate that in the state, we ensure that that work is done before someone completes teacher preparation. So that's part, it's the combination that you complete teacher preparation, you demonstrate that capacity through performance, which makes those exams no longer necessary. There are other people starting to do it, so I believe Wisconsin is removing their bar exam for lawyers who complete those programs. But I will say that it is not a bad thing to be on the innovative side of things in Minnesota, and so I would just leave that as a thought for committee members.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, both of you, for your answer. You brought up lawyers, and I think that's really interesting because just because I have a law degree doesn't mean I've passed the bar. And so it's very, and you still have to pass the bar in order to be a practicing licensed lawyer. So I hear what you're saying. I also, you know, you talked about being an innovative and how it's good to be innovative. I agree. We need to have independent way to verify that these teachers are ready to be in the classroom. You have said, both Representative Hassan and Dr. Bailey talked about how we have rigorous teacher prep programs. We have heard in this committee last year that we do not. And we may actually be improving that, and I hope that we do. But we have a bill coming for us soon that's going to talk about how we need more investments in literacy. I don't know how many times I heard last term teachers come here and say, I was not taught how to teach reading. And now we're taking away that they have to show, demonstrate a mastery of skill on the science of reading. That's what it says in this language. And so I agree that we need to go and look into the teacher prep program, and that teacher prep programs should be rigorous and should be able to be performative bases, because that's what student teaching is for and that's what's really important. We still need an independent measure to make sure these teachers are adequate enough to be in the classroom. Now, I say if we can't pass the test twice, which again, I told you I had to do it again because it is a difficult test, which I'm assuming, I think Pellsby or MDE is in charge of making it. So if you're in charge or whoever is in charge of making it, you know, we can look at that. Is there to be innovative, right? Since we want to be on the innovative path. If we want to be innovative, is there still an independent mechanism that we can do? I also just finished my doctorate. In order for me to get my doctorate, I had to finish a project and present my doctorate into a panel. Is there another way that we can do this that still honors the independent licensure programming rather than saying that we have rigorous teacher prep programs when we have teachers telling us that they are not rigorous? So, Madam Chair and Representative Hassan, I would really appreciate the sentiment, and I think it's really important for us to have this discussion. I'm glad we're having it. And I think it's something that we need to talk further about, and just simply eliminating it and saying, don't worry, we have rigorous teacher prep program, I don't think is true yet. But I like where we're going, and I think we need to be able to have that honest discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair. Right.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Other members, comments on discussion? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a concern that I have is that even if these measures were enacted, I'm not sure that they are going to provide the boost, the significant boost that is needed to get more teachers of color. I think that we need to take a close look at the pipeline that is producing our teachers in the state of Minnesota, our colleges and universities. What are they doing to encourage that we have more candidates for the education profession who are teachers of color? I heard a reference to Representative Keeler. You're on Higher Ed Committee, Representative Keeler. Do you know of any measures along the lines that I'm talking about within our colleges and universities to encourage teachers of color to enter education?
Representative Erdahl, you'd like to address a question to Representative Keeler?
Yes.
Would you be able to this is a little bit outside of the scope of our K through 12 system. Any comments at this point or something to follow up at a later date?
Madam Chair, if there's somebody, I didn't mean to single you out, just I heard you're on the committee. If there's someone else here from higher ed or anyone that would have an answer to that question.
Mr. Spies will address that question. Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, thank you for the question. The teacher candidate population in our 30-plus preparation programs across the state is about 17-18% BIPOC teacher candidates. So it's a lot more diverse than the overall teacher population. But it takes a lot more, as you know, it takes about 650 net gain of BIPOC teachers to increase the percentage, one percentage point in the state, because we have about 65,000 teachers in the state. So this is going to take a lot more preparation. That's why this bill includes the Grow Your Own program, the Collaborative Urban Greater Minnesota Educator of Color Grant program, the concurrent enrollment intro to teaching in the high school program, a lot of different programs to fund that pipeline and support people becoming teachers and getting into programs and completing programs, as well as on the back end to retain teachers once they're in the classrooms and in our schools.
All right, thank you. Representative Bigbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. A couple questions. Mr. Spies, thank you for talking about the concurrent enrollment. That's a key piece to pathways into teacher ed. A number of the districts, school districts, have educator pathway programs. So I think continuing to invest in those is a positive thing to grow our students enrolling in post-secondary education programs. One question though is that I did not see it addressed in the bill, so maybe I missed it, but oftentimes when we go through budget reductions, our newest hires are the first ones cut. And if we're making these important investments in teachers of color, those are going to be the first people cut because of how contracts are written. So I guess my question, Representative Hassan, Madam Chair, Representative Hassan, is why does this bill avoid addressing one of the primary barriers in retaining newly recruited teachers or licensed teachers of color, and continuing to follow the seniority privileges of last in, first out?
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Can't see your name.
Baker.
Okay. My favorite subject, right? LIFO. It comes up every single time. We have done a lot of work with minority lead. Damon last year to work on LIFO, and I'm open to the idea of addressing this in a way that doesn't also, it's a double-edged sword, right? It can also be used to get rid of the most senior members, not only that, but also like the best teachers who have been in this field for the longest and who are actually connecting with our students. So I would love to have conversation offline on what we need to do, but there are like multiple players that we have had conversation with, some of the unions, the department, as well as the coalition, and I'm open to having more conversation about that, but we're not there yet.
Thank you.
And I'm going to turn to Representative Joaquin.
Thank you. And more kind of comments than questions, because I know we've heard this bill for the last 4 years, and you've worked tirelessly on it to make sure that it's in the shape that it is. And it's part of the puzzle, right? It's part of the bigger piece of how we can make sure that we have qualified teachers in our classroom that connect with our kids, that look like our student body. And there's pieces in here that kind of remind me of wraparound services like we do with our students to wrap around our teachers to make them feel supported in the classroom. I know Representative Erdahl has been a big proponent of mentorship bills. He understands how important it is. God, I'm just as you to step it out for a sec. Sorry about that. So we know that that does work. And these are a lot of the things in here we know do work. And we've seen that with the HUE program and the other pathways. And over time, we've been working really hard to make sure we're getting teachers in the classroom, teachers that principal and Representative Baker can actually hire. Because I know that's a tough slug right now. I have our middle child is in his third year of teaching, and I don't think he's gotten a pink slip yet because they're so low on teachers. But part of that also goes to making sure that once we get our teachers in, because we do, we see within 3 years that because there's a high burnout rate from not feeling feeling supported and frankly not feeling respected. And some of that is the way we talk about teachers in our communities. I get a little triggered, and I'm sorry, with that LIFO, because that's actually an accounting term about parts and not people. So it'd be great to talk about it in a different way, and about 50% of our districts don't have that as number one in their contracts. So I think this is just part of the piece that we can do to keep teachers in our classroom. We can also talk about making sure our starting teachers have a livable wage, that we're respecting them as the experts that they are in their fields, and that we're living up to the promises we made in our pension system. So I just want to thank you for you bringing this piece of the puzzle to the table and how important it is for us to make this step, which should have, has been started for a while now in bits and pieces, but it's finally to make. But it's important to finally make that bigger move. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. At this point, we're closing our discussion. A part of the consideration, I'm going to return to Representative Bennett and then to our chief officer for closing remarks.
Representative Bennett. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions first, if that's okay, for Dr. Bailey. I'm glad you're still up there. So I know this bill eliminates the skills examinations, reading, writing, math, science of reading. First question is, how long has the science of reading been a test for, a skills test for teachers? Do we know when that came, or approximately?
And I think we're addressing Dr. Bailey on this question.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, I'm not positive. I could throw a guess out there, but I don't want to say the wrong thing. I do have this because we put together some research, because the board actually convened a group of stakeholders to dig into the issues around licensure exams for the past 1.5 years and make recommendations, so I could follow up with you on this and give you that information.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. That would be good to know, because as you're saying, we want to know, are these tests are they working to show us whether a teacher is ready or not? And if they're not working, we shouldn't be doing them. But as Rep. Mueller said, I don't know that we can just yank them out and not have anything either. It's pretty evident to me, as much as I respect our colleges and things and these teacher prep courses, that there's kind of some glaring holes in them. And we can't just remove the bar and just say, well, let whoever in. That doesn't make sense to me. But another question for Dr. Bailey, what skills examinations still remain? So we're removing reading, writing, math, and science of reading. Are there other skills examinations for teachers, or is this all of them?
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, so what this proposal includes removal of all licensure exams, and again, this is just for those who complete teacher preparation, not for every individual seeking licensure. The basic skills exam right now is used to get to Tier 4, but most individuals fulfill this with their ACT or other things that they've already taken. Some teachers, because of the timing of tier licensure, have not been able to do that because there's a gap in when it's applicable. So they've passed it. They've ideally demonstrated they can read and write and do math because they've gotten a college degree, but still can't get their full professional license. So this is kind of a matter of fairness in that respect. I just want to add to your earlier question that there are performance-based assessments like the EdTPA, and that we actually, again, have a group of experts working with teacher preparation on rubrics and assessment, performance-based assessment that would be used to deal with questions of literacy and preparedness for the classroom and evaluating ahead of people getting licensed. So this isn't a removing of these exams and there's nothing left in place. We're building this with the providers to do this more performance-based assessment. So I just want to clarify that piece.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and then I'll just make some final comments if I could.
Representative Bennett, yes.
Thank you, and thanks for those answers. And Rep. Hassan, I think there are really good things in this bill, but I'm concerned about lowering the bar, and I'm glad we're looking into other modes and methods, but especially in the science of reading. You know, currently we have 45% of our third graders in this state who can read at level. That is highly concerning, and it's telling me that something's really off here, and we need to deal with that. The other issue I see is, of course, we want to get more teachers of color in the system and put more in the bucket, as we might say, but then we're not fixing the holes in the bucket, which is once they're in, it's really hard to retain them because many school districts have negotiated policies where those teachers are the first to get cut. So I think that is also a concern, that we would spend all this money and effort to get these new teachers, and then the bucket leaks and we lose them. So I think those are things that need to be addressed. Again, there are some good things in here, but those in my mind are big factors, and I believe this needs more work to get these addressed. So thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Right, and we'll return to you, Representative Hassan, for closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for this great conversation. I was that student who was walking around in the hallways in our schools who didn't see teachers that looked like them. I was that student who never felt that I was valued or seen or heard. 20 years later, we're talking about the same problem. We had an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old sit last Wednesday on these seats and tell us that they really want teachers who look like them, who can validate their experience. So let's get it right for once. And diversity, equity, and inclusion are not just cliche words. There are things that are important to our communities of color, indigenous communities. Every student should be heard, seen, and feel valued. And this is what House File 20 does. Please support it, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative. With that, we will move on to a vote on House File 320. Renew my motion to refer House File 320 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right. With that,
thank you.
You're on the way to Ed Finance. Thank you. Thank you, everyone that participated in this presentation. We went a little bit beyond our time, and we'll probably have to work with that as we get into the next bills right now. This is an important discussion for our committee as well as for education in Minnesota. So thank you. All right. Next, we are turning to House File 368. Our chief author is Representative Hansen. And if you can come forward, Representative Hansen is not a member of this committee. Representative Feist will move House File. Representative Feist, then I will call on you move House File 368 before us. And the intent right now is to lay the bill over and have it be part of our committee's work. So that is the motion. Would you be willing to make that a motion, Representative Feist, as a co-author of the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File 368 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Feist. All right, Representative Hansen, welcome. Great to see you this afternoon, and look forward to the discussion of your bill. And just, you know, something that we need to talk about, and glad that we can be before the committee today. I believe that before we get to the bill, that you actually have an author's amendment. It would be the A2 amendment. Representative Feist, would you move the A2 amendment? And then we'll ask the author to address the amendment and then the bill.
Yes, so moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Feist. All right, Representative Hansen. It may be a brief mention of what the A2 amendment is before we get to your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. The A2 amendment seeks to, one, get the bill in the form that I would wish it to be in, but more importantly, into the specific details. This ensures that the protected classes that we mention in my bill match our current human rights statutes.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. This is just an amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like it to be up for consideration. Members, we'll vote. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment carries and we are now hearing the bill with the A2 amendment added. Representative Hansen, please again identify yourself for our committee today and the records and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Representative Jess Hansen from District 55A. I represent Savage and Northwest Burnsville. My pronouns are she and her. And thank you again, members, for having me back to hear more about the Beyond Bullying bill. This was heard in your committee last year, and I'm continuing my work on this because this policy is both needed and critical so that more kids can be safe from hate at school. And so school is a safe and welcoming environment for all children. I'll say, before we get started, that this subject matter can be very heavy, and the trauma that this conduct seeks to address runs very deep, and I want to acknowledge that. Last year, youth and parents from around Minnesota joined me to testify about the prevalence of hate that they witnessed or endured in Minnesota schools around the state. This year, we're having a shorter hearing on this, but I would be remiss if I did not invite you all to please review last year's testimony. The hearing was held on February 21st, 2022, and I know not everyone knows how to access previous year's committees, so I wanted to lay that out for people watching. You go to the Minnesota House website, go to committees, choose minutes, select the Education Policy Committee, and select the 26th meeting on 2/21/22 to see the archived video or hear the audio. I assure you, it is worth your time to directly hear from the testifiers about their experiences with the hate in our schools and the damage it has caused to both kids and their families. Again, this is an urgent issue that we must address head on to ensure that all children are provided an equal opportunity to receive a world-class education free from hate. So as a reminder for those who are new to the committee or new folks who are watching and who may not know about the efforts of last year's Beyond Bullying work, this bill seeks to require school boards to adopt policies that address malicious and sadistic conduct that's aimed at bullying a child for their race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, disability, family income, or other protected class status. This type of conduct goes beyond bullying, hence our name for the bill. And it can permanently harm a child's psyche, their self-worth, their mental health, their sense of dignity and worth. And tragically, it can lead a child to contemplate, attempt, or even complete suicide. By and large, we agree that racism is wrong, as is sexism, xenophobia, transphobia, ableism, sexual harassment, and all forms of prejudice, discrimination, hate, and dehumanization. It's wrong. And bullies who target their victims because of their identity must be taught the importance of kindness, care, and empathy. And they must be held accountable for their actions in ways that are inclusive and reparative, rather than purely exclusive and punitive, such as suspension, expulsion, or criminalization. Too many kids have to go to school and endure hateful comments and bullying that are targeted at their identity. No child deserves to be made fun of, bullied, or harmed for who they are. And unfortunately, thousands of Minnesota children are targeted for just that every day. And last year in our committee, we had collected stories from over 10,000 children who had witnessed or experienced racism in the previous 12 months in Minnesota schools around the state. Their bullies are often not provided an avenue to learn how to be more kind and to learn why engaging in hate is wrong. This bill seeks to start at the local level and protect more kids from these kinds of bullies at school. While civil rights laws are intended to snuff out this conduct in schools, we all know they don't. Pursuing civil rights lawsuits are tedious, lengthy, expensive, and too often inaccessible, and I don't think we should rely on lawsuits to solve this problem one kid at a time. So I've been asked, why do we need this bill? We have bullying laws, we've got federal civil rights laws, we've got some of the strongest human rights laws in the nation. But here we are. All of those things are true, but after a terrible incident in my community, I gathered with youth and parents together to hear their experiences and to figure out some solutions. And out of these conversations and devastating stories came a very strong and assertive coalition of youth and supportive grown-ups who made it their mission to do their part to intervene. That's the bill that's before you today. Some of you may know that MSBA creates model policies to be implemented by school boards to centralize and support the need for evolving policies and environments. And MSBA has a policy that addresses much of what my bill touches on, and in some cases it even goes further to protect kids who come from diverse familial systems. This bill bridges the disconnect between the existence of a model policy and the requirement to implement it. MSBA is not an enforcing organization, but we in the legislature can do our part to codify into law that it's a requirement to adopt policies that specifically address the malicious and sadistic conduct happening in our schools. This has to be a staple in our schools going forward. We must set an example for future generations so that they know this conduct is not okay anywhere, especially in schools. Schools should be a safe place for every child, whether they are Black, Latinx, Indigenous, Jewish, Muslim, African, immigrant, gay, Christian, Catholic, white, trans, cis, girls, boys, non-binary kids, elementary age and school age, able-bodied kids and kids with disabilities, rich and poor kids, all deserve to be safe at school. And this bill brings us one step closer to creating the world that where we live our values, and we respect diversity, and we promote accountability and acceptance, and we model kindness and care for our littlest Minnesotans. With that, I will turn it over to any testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. The first testifier we have is Mr. Bill Whalen, and then after that, to be prepared is, and you can actually come up, I think, Miss, my eyes are bad. Miss Kale Campbell. So our first two testifiers, please join us.
All right. Can you guys hear me okay?
All right. Yes, we can.
Awesome. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Bill Whalen. I'm a citizen of Savage, and I have four kids, three of which are in the currently enrolled in Prior Lake schools. They range between seventh grade and a freshman at the U. I'm going to keep my comments brief and direct so that we can get time for the rest of the agenda today. Here's my perspective on this statute and why we need it. The human rights laws, frankly, don't address these things. Existing bullying laws in the state of Minnesota don't address the severity. And as Jess mentioned, lawyers are expensive, and this all disrupts learning. But at the end of the day, protecting these kids disrupts more of their learning and mental health than anything. And how do I know this? So last school year, every single school week that my kids went to school, I reported and they reported multiple incidents. And this was incidents of bullying and discrimination. These ranged from students calling my kids names of how they identify, grabbing their things and slamming them to the ground, shattering iPads, attempting to get my kids to engage in physical altercations in bathrooms and other locations, trying to blame it on them and victim blame, telling them things like, hey, they're emo, why don't you just go kill yourself? My kids, they've been told to kill themselves many times over the last few school years. And clearly this crosses the line of what I would call kids being kids and is seditious. It is malicious. Similar behavior in my workplace would be immediate grounds for dismissal. So I work closely with the administration. They attempted to work directly with the incidents, but they couldn't stop them. Students, including mine, they're not comfortable being themselves because of how they're treated. Unfortunately, the administrator that was helping persistently keep my kids safer left the district, and as a result, the replacement hasn't stepped forward and kept kids accountable. They basically have ghosted my child that has reported problems, and they're not getting help anymore. I reached out to the school resource officer about incidents where kids were posting pictures of my kids online, and the response was, bullying isn't illegal and there's nothing we can do about it. Unless it's pornographic, they won't step in. I reported our situation as a whole to the Federal Department of Civil Rights and or the Education Civil Rights Department, and it's their job to take care of this thing. They essentially ghosted me and couldn't tell me if or when these issues would be even addressed by them. They refused to commit to anything. As a part of the last year or so working with these things, I also reached out to parents in our district to collect data because I was curious, like, is this something I'm just feeling? Because I had a sense that these issues were there but just not getting dealt with. It's a systemic problem. And of those parents that submitted anonymously a survey that I put out there, over roughly about 100 people responded. 40%, 45%, I'd have to look at the numbers specific, but around 45 to 50% said that essentially they didn't report an issue or did and didn't get resolution. So, you know, a large majority of these issues aren't getting dealt with at all. So, you know, the question is, how, as a dad, would this help me? How would this solve the problem? You know, I think this would set a standard and a precedent that every kid is allowed and afforded a safe place to learn and explore who they are as a human being. Ultimately, that's what we're here for. That shouldn't be difficult to ask. Districts are afforded way too much leniency. Prior Lake literally copy and pasted the state's policy, but there's no understanding of what really should happen if X, Y, and Z occurs. Parents also need to be held accountable at some level. One incident related to my kids included bullying on social media platforms in front of countless classmates, humiliating my kid. And of those three kids that did it, only one of the three sets of parents even responded to me because I wanted to give them a heads up what was going on before they found out about it from the school. So I honestly worry every single day about my kids and what's going to happen to them when they're in that building. So obviously this would reduce my anxiety and allow my kids to focus on what's most important, which is their learning. So what happens if we don't do this? If we do nothing, you know, we already know what that means, that there's mental health epidemics happening today, and it's nothing short of staggering, but this is just going to continue and get worse. I have a child who was hospitalized as a result. A number of districts have had legal liabilities and because of a lack of control and regulation and intervention. There should be penalty and attention on students that treat kids in this way that are overtly destructive, that fall into that seditious category. And I honestly think that we owe it to our kids to step forward and protect them, and that's why I've gotten involved. Our family, we're open, and we dialogue about these things, but many parents don't know what their kids are up to, what's happening to them, or even how to deal with it if their kid's out of control. So they also need help. So we owe it to the districts in our state, students and parents to step up. We owe it to them to enforce a minimum level of expectation when it comes to how kids can expect safety within their school buildings. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. For all of our testifiers, we could probably spend an hour with each one of you, and because what you have to say is so important. But we have even another bill to hear today, so we're hoping for 2 minutes of your testimony, and really appreciate you being here. I think you would please introduce yourself for the records, and please proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the House Education Policy Committee. I'm honored to be here today to express my support for House File 368. My name is Kales Campbell, and I'm currently a student at Concordia University, St. Paul. As a former high school student, I have seen the devastating effects of bullying and harassment in our schools. Every day, our students are forced to endure a hostile learning environment, particularly students of color, one where they are made to feel unsafe, disrespected, and alone. It is a harsh reality that no child should have to face, and yet it is one that is all too common in our schools. The proposed legislation aims to put an end to this vicious cycle by prohibiting malicious and sadistic conduct involving race, gender, religion, sexual harassment, sexual orientation, and sexual exploitation in our schools. It is a crucial step in ensuring that all students have the right to a safe and respectful learning environment. This legislation is not only about ensuring the safety of our schools, but also about protecting the lives of our students. Studies have shown that those who are victims of bullying are at a higher risk for depression, anxiety, and suicide. This bill serves as a proactive measure to address this issue by mandating that school boards establish written policies addressing malicious and sadistic conduct, holding both staff and students accountable for their actions and providing clear disciplinary guidelines. I implore you to consider the gravity of this issue and the urgency of this proposed legislation. Every day that we delay is another day that students are made to feel unsafe, disrespected, and alone. Every day that we delay is another day that we risk losing a student to suicide. This is not a hypothetical issue. It is a matter of life and death. And it is one that requires immediate action. By taking action and supporting this bill, we can create a safer and more inclusive learning environment for all students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I'm going to call up the next two testifiers. Again, part of it's from the office. Isla, and Mr. Chris Jones. And Mr. Jones, if you actually would come up at this point too, then we'll be able to move between our testifiers more quickly. Please proceed. Identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It is my honor to offer testimony in favor of House File 368 and proposal to prohibit malicious and sadistic conduct in schools. My name is Aaliyah Murray. I am currently a senior at Fridley High School. I am the founding president of Minnesota Teen Activists. We are a youth-oriented organization rooted in communities of color that centers on regulation, equity, and advocacy as we work in injustices within the school system. In 2020, we created a survey regarding racism in schools where we heard from more than 10,000 former and current students along with parents, educators, and activists, all residing in Minnesota. The stories we heard was heart-wrenching. Out of 10,000 students, 10.1% felt as their school would take them seriously after reporting a racist incident. Out of 10,000 students, 75.4% of students felt as their school does not do a good job of handling situations regarding racism. Out of 10,000 students, 43.1% said they have experienced racism in their schools. Out of 10,000 students, 30.4% said their school has not taught them how to deal with racism. Out of 10,000 students, 69.9% said they are not aware of any resources if they are a victim of racism. Out of 10,000 students, 9.3% said they would feel comfortable talking to a school counselor. Out of 10,000 students, 24.7% reported that they reported racism with no result from the school. I hope you all take into account what students are facing within schools, and if you cannot, your institution is simply a sham. I believe House File 368 is a step in the right direction. You must protect all vulnerable children, teachers, and administrators, and give the kids a better future. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. My understanding is that Mr. Jones is not here, so we'll move on, and we actually have a remote testifier, and then we have two in person. It would be Mr. Spearman and then Ms. Sri Jock. And during this testimony, if you can move to the stand, but right now I will turn to our remote testifier, I believe, which is Bergen Hirschman.
I want to make sure everybody can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me back. My name is Bergen Hartman. I'm a certified consent culture educator through Safe Bay. I'm an ally member of Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. I'm currently working as an advocate for Aaron's Law, helping Minnesota schools implement lessons of consent and sexual abuse prevention for students pre-K through 12th grade. And I myself am a survivor of sexual abuse. The reason that I'm supporting this bill is that in my personal experience and in my work, I've found that there are some protective measures in place for children in our schools, but very few that are really enforcing these rules, and not enough repercussions for not enforcing these rules. I think a bill like this clearly outlines the protocol for handling misconduct. In 2 years of advocating for Aaron's Law, which passed in 2019, I have yet to meet an educator who had ever even heard of Aaron's Law before I'd approached them. I've also encountered situations where I ask a teacher or administrator who their Title IX director is, and they say, I don't know. Now, the last time I testified for this bill a year ago, I told a pretty graphic story about an incident that happened in the Edina public school system a few years ago, and I don't believe I have time to reiterate that today, but what I will say is that there are some pretty massive sexual abuse and child pornography scandals happening in our schools today that are being completely swept under the rug, either due to gross negligence or a lack of preparedness. They simply don't know how to approach discipline or investigations of these kinds. Having a bill like this in place ensures that schools are held accountable for protecting kids. These children spend the majority of their hours awake in a day in school, the majority of their days in a week in school, the majority of their months of the year in school. It's really the responsibility of these schools to prioritize student safety from sexual abuse, harassment, bullying, and discrimination. I believe that conflict avoided is conflict multiplied. Every time we ignore these issues, they happen again. So passing this bill would set a standard of excellence in our state for other states to follow, and it would undoubtedly have a positive impact on students' physical and mental health. This is a matter that's very dear to my heart, so thank you for your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for giving me this opportunity to testify in favor of House File 368. I am Tyshawn Spearman, and I am from District 5. I graduated from Patrick Henry High School in the year of 2021 and have attended the Minneapolis School District my entire education. I, myself, have suffered from bullying while in school, from commenting on my body appearance, being assaulted to being sexually assaulted, and blatant racism, which affected my mental health, sense of worth. It also affected my relationship with teachers, students, and school administrators. This caused my graduation, my path to graduating much harder. And my mother did what she could. She reached out to teachers, school administrators, principals, and attempted to reach the school board with no advance. We were set aside and not cared for. However, I did graduate, yet a lot of my peers that I grew up with did not have the opportunity nor the help to continue with her. High school education. Now let's imagine a member of your family coming home from school saying they've been harassed or sexually harassed by another student or students. If that student is a male, there's a chance they will not get the help that is needed and will be brushed aside to deal with sadistic behavior on their own. If the student is a female, there is still a chance they won't get the help they've requested, which can lead to failing grades, suicide, and changes in social behavior, which can also carry over to students' homes and families. I strongly believe education is a right, not a privilege. I also strongly believe that safety and security is a right and not a privilege. Young people in school who have dealt with this or are still dealing with the struggles of being in a hostile learning environment are children of our next generation. They should be looked after, cared for, and protected. I believe House File 368 will make education a more safe learning environment, but a fun learning environment, and will create a brighter future for our kids where they are safe from harm. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and Committee. My name is Srija Thirukavalur, and I'm a constituent for Minnesota's 3rd Congressional District. I'm 17 years old, and I'm a senior at Wayzata High School, and I'm here in support of the House File 368 bill because I believe it's fundamental in creating an inclusive and accountable learning environment. The start of my 9th grade and start of high school, the first month, a student had spray-painted a bold statement on our building stating no Indians, with the full knowledge that our neighborhood and the population within our high school was predominantly South Indian. Our school district acted quick in response to this but still the damage was done for many of our members. And then in junior year, five teachers came out, or were...
Sorry, Madam Chair, I don't know what's happening.
So my junior year of high school, five teachers came out as being pedophiles. They were exposed for repeatedly harassing and making sexual remarks to students. And when students went to go report these issues, they weren't believed until another teacher was involved. And now in senior year, with the complete shift to being in person, our mental health for minority students are being greatly impacted. Thus, people are not attending classes anymore, doing their assignments, and our failing rates are increasing. The Culture and Equity Committee have come together numerous of times and interviewed many minority students, and they've gathered that this was due to an unwelcoming and often neglectful environment by the predominantly white classroom. Even though they voiced their concerns, school board members chose repeatedly to ignore them on the account of the fact that they were more focused on funding other departments. Although the community has offered free help and resources, they still continue to neglect the needs of minority students. And this has led to, rather than having it be an educational moment where they can fix these issues, they've chosen to use consequences such as suspension and even expelling them from classes. And then when teachers have come out in support of students, they've been the first to be laid off, especially last year in middle school, all the teachers that identified with the LGBTQ+ community were fired first. And so this is why I think this bill should be passed, because it not only will hold my school accountable, but others like it. And it will dictate what behaviors and actions they allow and will make sure that they conduct in a more ethical and inclusive environment. Thank you.
Thank you. And in the room, we heard you. And apologize for the static and the interference. And thank you for carrying on and continuing with your testimony. Thank you. All right. Thank you for our testifiers today. And I know the testifiers that have come before the committee before to talk about this bill and the need for this bill. We are we're moving through this pretty quickly. If we can do a quick comments and any pertinent questions at this point, and then call on the person.
I just have a quick question or something to work on as we lay this over. I don't think the language, and I checked nonpartisan staff, mm-hmm. includes independent contractors for the schools.
Yes.
I'm thinking of that because our Hopkins School District started hiring an independent contract for the paras in the hallway. Mm-hmm. So that might be something you want to look at to have school districts required to put some of that into contracts. I know they get notice of the policy, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure when you talk about holding folks accountable and what you're doing, to just think about it and maybe work on that too.
I think Rex and you can, and we're not voting on it today, so I do assure you that there'll be time for more comments. And we would still like to have one more bill today, but I can take perhaps a comment from Representative Bennett and then turn to the bill author.
Just a quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the bill author. Thank you. So malicious and sadistic obviously is very serious. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious why only for protected classes? It seems like this is serious enough, it shouldn't be allowed for anybody, no mm-hmm. matter what the reason. So just curious why you've named protected classes, but not just prohibit it in schools, period.
Yeah. Sorry. Thank you, Chair. I apologize. Thank you, Representative Bennett. You make a really great point. This bill was brought forward by children who were most directly impacted. And so a lot of this language was designed to address their specific incidents. But to Joachim, and to your point, those are definitely things that I'm open to. You're right. No kid should face this, and that's what I mentioned in my comments. Every child deserves to be safe at school. I have not heard a lot from, other groups of kids. The vast majority of people coming forward and asking me to do this work are children of color, children from the LGBTQIA communities, Muslim children, Jewish children, and that's really the kind of coalition that they built around this. But of course, I'm open to both of the suggested changes.
Okay. And Madam Chair, one more quick question, if I could. And so on the teacher side of this, at this point, if it's malicious or sadistic, it goes into their teacher contract or whatever is set up in their school district, can be negotiated. This seems to rise again to a special level, malicious and sadistic. Why shouldn't it go directly to professional discipline by the licensing board?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Bennett. The issues that occur when it is a teacher to a child or a student, those are different power dynamics that we do have existing laws that address pretty clearly. Licensing regulations, MDE has followed up on those. Education Minnesota has lawyers that represent those teachers. Really, what we're trying to make sure we address is all kinds of malicious and sadistic behavior. My bill defines what that is. You'll see that it says about creating a hostile learning environment, and I'll let you read that just for the sake of time. I won't go over all of that. But this is specifically to just have a policy in place. And you'll notice that my bill is not prescriptive as much as it is instructive, that you must have a policy. I do not dictate what that policy must say. MSBA has been the professionals developing these model policies for a number of years, and as I mentioned, they have a model policy that addresses this. The issue is the implementation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And now we will lay over House File 368 as amended for the consideration. Thank you, Representative. Thank you for your testifiers today. I'm
very thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I move House File 271 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Representative Edelson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and present your bill.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. It's good to see all of you. I'm Heather Edelson. I represent Edina and a portion of Bloomington. I am here today with a bill that we're calling Recess for All. If you ask any child in a K through 5 setting, and I know we have a principal here, so you know, you're going to know all about this, what their favorite time of the day is at one point from year to year, each child is going to say recess. It provides it's just a path for them to just, there's no planning. It's not like from the next 20 minutes, we're going to do reading. They get to go play with their friends. They get to be outside and have fresh air. And I have a whole list of things I want to bring you through, but I think more than anything, I think it's really important that I want you to hear from my testifiers today. I have Simon here, who I want to go to right after this. But I just want to say that recess is being withheld from students. Right now, it was withheld from my sons. It was withheld from, I had two pages that were in my office earlier. It was withheld from their friends. It happens in every district unless you have a policy. I don't know that when it is withheld, that harm is meant. Oftentimes it's withheld because the teacher thinks at the one point that, you got to get caught up on your homework. Substitute teachers do it often. I would say that it causes great harm, though, and in the extent of if you have a child that has ADHD or a child that is on the spectrum, they need to go outside and play. They need to move their body, or the behavior is going to get worse. And also, we're punishing children in that instance for just being who they are. Overwhelmingly, we don't have any data, but we hear that a lot of students of color, this is used as a form of punishment with them. And so I just want to make sure that we highlight our testifiers today. And Madam Chair, I'd like to go ahead and go to them now.
Hello, my name is Simon Hofer, and I am in fifth grade. When I was younger, some of my teachers thought made me stay inside during recess when they thought I was misbehaving. I didn't like it. I don't remember what I did that made them tell me to stay in, but I am autistic, so it probably had something to do with my anxiety. I get anxious a lot in school, and sometimes I say things I shouldn't when I get stressed out. Sometimes I need to move my body when my teachers want me to sit still. Sometimes I had to stay in for recess. It felt bad and didn't help me behave the way my teachers wanted me to. I made a list of 5 reasons why recess should not be taken away from kids. 1, kids need to move. They will get grouchy when they don't. 2, kids need to exercise and get fresh air. 3, taking recess away almost never helps. It just makes things worse. 4, when we have to stay inside instead of playing outside, it usually just makes us more likely to make bad choices. 5, what if someone just has anxiety like me and it sometimes isn't really under their control? They just get overwhelmed sometimes. I don't think teachers are trying to be mean, but making us stay inside doesn't help kids do better. I would like teachers to stop taking recess away from kids when they misbehave. Most of us are trying really hard to make good choices, but sometimes we just can't. Taking away recess or lunch just makes it even harder for us to behave. Instead, I think teachers should talk to students and ask them what would help them do better next time. Thank you.
Simon, if you want to stay up here, you can.
Who is on remote testing?
You want to come stay with me?
Today.
Yeah, you can right here.
Dr. Van Bank?
Yeah, you can go ahead and sit right here. Not where she can sit.
Yes, Dr. Van Bank. Can you all hear me? Okay.
Yes, we can hear you. So please identify
yourself again. Okay, thank you. Yep, absolutely. Yep. Yep, thank you. I'm Dr. Heather Van Bank. I'm a professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato. I teach in the Department of Family Consumer Science. We know that recess is important for the social, emotional, cognitive, and physical development of children. In 2013, the Academy of Pediatrics wrote a policy statement stating that recess serves as a necessary break from the rigors of concentrated academic challenges in the classroom. Recess allows children to be more attentive and productive in the classroom after recess break. The Academy further states that recess should never be withheld as punishment, as it serves as a fundamental component of development and social interaction. Minimizing or eliminating recess can negatively affect children. Teachers need all the tools in the toolbox to help children meet their developmental goals. And recess is a tool that helps build children's capacities in and out of the classroom. In 2021, I surveyed Minnesota parents about their children's recess. Parents think that recess is an important part to getting a good education. Of the 185 respondents, 80% agreed that recess should not be withheld as punishment. During recess, children problem solve, manage their emotions, but most of all, recess is for playing and having fun. 83% of parents said that recess should be a required part of the school day. On average, children get about 20 to 25 minutes of recess. Why should we withhold the only time during the day that children have to play with their friends and not have adults telling them what to do. We know better, and the research tells us that children need play. Recess is a right, not a privilege. Recess should be part of a regular school day and not viewed as an opportunity for children to make up classwork or punish children. I can't help but notice that all of you have been sitting here so politely. I'm sure some of you are wiggling your fingers and tapping your toes, ready to stand up and move. Imagine if someone told you that you couldn't have 20 minutes of recess. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will have Heather Anderson.
Hi. Okay. Hi, my name is Heather Anderson. I'm a former educator. I'm a community organizer. I'm an education equity advocate. And I'm a mom of two children in Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you so much for having me today. When I was a young teacher, it was a very common practice for us to take recess away from children or even to take part of their minutes away. That was something that I did as a young teacher. It never really made sense to me, but it was also what everybody else did around me, so that's what I did. It was also interesting, and remember, like, I can think back to when they would call us and say, no recess because it's snowing, no recess because it's raining, and all the teachers would groan, right? So it was that same thing that made our jobs more difficult in the afternoon that we volunteered and did to children, right, as part of, like, discipline or classroom management, I think they called it. It wasn't until I was a young parent and my children came home from school in first grade, devastated and didn't want to go to school the next day because they had already lost their entire recess for the entire next day, for the entire class. What is the point of even going to school if there is no recess? They both cried. And we emailed the teacher and understood that she was under a lot of pressure to do reading assessments for the entire class without support of an aide. It was really lucky that I was a stay-at-home mom and I was able to go in and volunteer every day for the rest of those reading assessment times to manage the classroom so that recess didn't have to get taken away from all of those little cuties. It was a great time to be able to, like, help the teacher manage that time so that she could focus on it. But I'll just say that in part of my work today, I get to spend a large amount of my time in racially isolated and high-poverty schools. I want you to know that, like, right now, today, children lost recess or the fun things or the best parts of their day as a way to try to gain control or discipline students. It doesn't work. I can think of one student in my children's fifth grade class. Every single day that I volunteered at school, I saw that same child in the hallway. He was gifted at math. He didn't get to help with the bake sale, though, because it was punishment, right? He was brilliant, he was kind, but I can tell you that every single time that I saw him in the hallway, he wasn't learning. Every time that I saw him sitting in at recess, he wasn't part of the classroom. Maybe that teacher and he had a standstill, I don't know. But what I'll say is, I think we can all agree that there are certain things that your parents did when they were raising you that you did not do with your children, right? And I think that this kind of like archaic thing that we do where we punish children instead of letting them play and we don't recognize that play is actually a part of learning, it's archaic. It's a tool that we don't need anymore. I can also tell you of amazing, brilliant teachers in Minneapolis public schools that come up with thousands of ways to engage children without taking away their play. Thank you so much for hearing me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I'm the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union. And since I'm the last testifier, I'm going to keep it very, very short and sweet. I echo all the testimony that was heard today. I was going to say all of those things, but what I will say is at MPU, we provide one-on-one support to pre-K to families as they navigate the pre-K to 12th grade education system. And one thing that I've noticed is when a child reports that they've had recess withheld to the parent, they relay the emotion of embarrassment, hurt, and animosity. And then they relay those emotions to their parents. And so parents report, we need a new toolbox, a toolbox that includes recess, a toolbox that includes love, a toolbox that includes support, and a toolbox, as Heather has said, that incorporates other ways of correcting kids' behaviors when they misbehave. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson, for doing this and signing on to this. I sit here as a representative, but also as a mom of a first grader who actually today I just got the email that, you know, he was diagnosed with ADHD. We're still walking through medication, you know, regimens, making sure that we're working. He's in first grade. He's 6 years old. You know, wiggles or something, and he'll tell you, like, sometimes my body just has wiggles that I can't control. And he's really good at walking back through that, but today recess was taken away. So then you take a kid who clearly needed to get his wiggles out and go and then, like, sit him inside when he could have gone out for fresh air. They've been inside a lot because the weather is so cold. So I agree, and I know from my 6-year-old, when he comes home and he's missed out, it really just impacts him and his ability to continue to focus. It's like they need to get that out to pull themselves back together. Thank you for this. Thank you for the work that you're doing for our littles and advocating for them. Simon, you did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I guess on the face of it, I wouldn't think that this is so important if I didn't remember what happened to me and if I had when I was in grade school. And if I still remember it, it must be important. I was suspended from recess. All I did was cast aspersions on the call in Fayette of the umpire. But the umpire happened to also be my classroom teacher. So no recess that day. It's obviously it's affected me my whole life.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. Edelson. I'll just say, as a former first grade teacher of 33 years, kids need recess.
And to you, Representative Edelson.
Well, man, I think I'm going to cry. No, I love this. Thank you for the bipartisan support. And thank you, Representative Erdahl and Representative Bennett, Representative Keeler. It happens. I genuinely don't think people know when you take away recess, when the teachers are doing it, that they're causing so much harm. But it's harmful. As Simon said, we have a 5-point plan to make it better, and I think it will be very meaningful that we pass this with bipartisan support. Right, Simon? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.